What's up, dental marketer family? Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Dental Marketer Podcast. In this episode, we are talking to Dr. Jonish Ashbal, and I'm just going to jump into it, guys. I'm going to jump into this episode because it's going to be an episode that a lot of you guys are going to probably go back to listen to, especially if you're doing a startup practice. This is one you want to listen to because maybe you might have seen him on Facebook. I'm sorry, Facebook. Jonish Ash. And we really get into his business, okay? So we figure out how much was his total build out, the type of practice he has. We also talk about weeding out third-party insurances, but also the employees he's hired too. Some he's had to let go. Also how he just hired, at the time of this recording, which is probably like about 2 months ago, how he just hired two hygienists. We also talk about the total production and collection. Now, this type of info is interesting because you really don't hear this type of stuff in other podcasts. And what I mean by that is maybe you see it sometimes, or you hear like of successful practices or unsuccessful practices and what they failed and what they did. But as far as your Facebook friends and things like that, we really want to know like what's their deal, right? And Jonas is amazing for allowing us to interview him as much as possible ask him as many questions as possible. And so a lot of you guys have these questions, like I said, in total production and collection. I don't know if he's been open for a year yet. I believe he has not. But we also talk about how many days he is open and how long it took him to open the days he wanted. Also, he had to scale back on the days. And it wasn't because he was too busy. So we'll talk about that as well. We also talk about what he was doing for ground marketing that helped with the grand opening and so forth. How many new patients is he attracting currently? And how saturated is his practice? Or how saturated is dentistry, I'm sorry, in his community? We talk about that as well. And one of the main questions everybody asks is, hey, what's the best ROI that we can do? And so he's going to talk about his best ROI. Now, keep in mind, a lot of the times, guys, demographics and where your community's at depends so much. So keep that in mind when listening to this. And we also talk about his demographics and community. So you'll definitely keep it in mind. You'll say, hey, that sounds like my town. Let me give that a shot. Or that doesn't sound like my town at all. Maybe I shouldn't give it a shot. I don't know. But we also talk about Dr. Jonas' biggest fails. And then we start to get to know how did everything come to be. Meaning, why did he open a practice? Why did he become a dentist? And also, does he plan to open a second practice? Spoiler alert, he does, and it's in the works. So guys, get ready to hear this amazing episode. Go give some love to Jonas when you see him on Facebook, Jonas Ash. Be like, hey man, I heard you on the Dental Marketer Podcast. I have extra questions or concerns or whatever, right? He's super awesome. If you have any questions or concerns, feel free to ask him. Ask me, whoever you want. And yeah, guys, without any further delay, here's Dr. Jonas Ashbal. All right, ma'am. So let's get into your business, all right? Let's talk about how much was your build out?
Yes, my build out was, so I'll start back. The original loan amount that I got was roughly about $500,000. By the end, I was able to increase the amount to about $525,000.
Oh, wow, okay.
How'd
you increase it?
You just submit them like the quote for the build out, you submit to, I use Bank of America, it was the bank I used to finance it. Just due to the cost of my build out, I was able to submit like supporting forms, and they go, oh, okay, looks like you need more money here. So my build out was a little extended. You know, it took us a little bit longer. Probably, honestly, I opened and I was already paying rent for about three, maybe 3.5 months before I even open my door. So, I mean, you know, my landlord has already taken out, you know, $15,000, and I hadn't made a cent. And that was like, you know, huge hits to my working capital. So like I needed extra funding from the bank. And I also had to use, you know, a lot of my own money to get this place off the ground, like way more money out of my own pocket than I ever would have imagined.
Dang. The landlord didn't give you enough. He didn't give you free rent like for a couple.
He did. I had 3 months of free rent. But you know what? The biggest thing was that mine was a new build out. So I knew, you know, I could watch it being built, the entire, you know, commercial strip down in. I'm watching it being built. But by the time I got around to it, the plans they had given us had changed due to like permitting or what have you. But like 6 months prior when I got the plans, when I walked in the front door for the first time with my contractor, and you look around and you go, oh, there's a steel beam here. Oh, the hookup is right here. Everything just exploded. And you go, and he just says to me, I can go back to the architect. Like we can't use what we had. This is totally different than what was on the paper. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm thinking that we could, as soon as I got the keys, I could have them in the next day, breaking ground, you know, digging up trenches. But, you know, we need to go back and we get our permit. So honestly, but as soon as I got the key, probably we had to resubmit for permits by 14 days later. And permitting took about 3 months. So, I mean, it took a long time. And so that just really set us back. I mean, my contract did a bang up job getting it off the ground. Like once the permit was finalized, mm-hmm. and he went as far as he could, like legally, like he was able to do the trenches. He was able to do, he almost like labeled them as like improvements as opposed to full on build outs. Like you can kind of get around that, you know, like if you get like a window mm-hmm. installed, you don't need like a permit for that. It's just like a home improvement. So I was able to do some things to really speed up the process while we're waiting for that. But we still had to wait for the city to come through, do their inspections, and finalize that stuff. So it really, I mean, definitely stress-wise, taxing, you know, everything involved in the whole process was stressful. And that was just another thing, like, added on top of it.
Dang, yeah. Man. So then what type of practice do you have right now?
It's family oriented PPO practice. You know, we don't accept any HMOs or Medicaid. And we're in network with probably six insurances, two of them being two like umbrella insurance companies that include like the umbrella insurance companies probably include like 30 to 40 insurances, but they're all run through one pre-negotiated fee schedule. So like it's like you're in network via a third party umbrella insurance company, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you think you're gonna add more insurances, or are you gonna be in network with more?
No. You know, there might be one that I may add, but there'll be more that I take away. So like you have to kind of weed out some of those mm-hmm. those third party insurances that you get in, because some of them are harder to deal with. And then there's one that I chose the higher plan of the two they offer, and if you choose the lower plan, then you have to see the higher plan at the lower fee schedule. But I'm seeing a lot of people with the lower plan in my area, so it's one that's Cigna that I'm referring to. They have a DPPO fee schedule. Then they have it's like a DPPO advantage. I might not be saying that right, but there's another plan they have which is lower. But I'm seeing a lot of the employers in my area are using that one as opposed to the other one.
Mm-hmm. When starting up, are you the one who kind of like handled all that, or did you have someone else, like a consultant or a company, handle all the like what should I be in network with or with who and stuff like that?
That's a great question. I mean, you need to, honestly, I've heard of people doing it themselves, but I did use you know, quote unquote, like insurance negotiator. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, for a startup, like there's not much negotiation. Like you don't have any negotiating power. I mean, you can talk to them about like your top 25 codes, and you might be able to get a little increase there. But I mean, honestly, unless you're going into like a really rural area that insurance care is not in, there's not much wiggle room for negotiations. Like Delta, I mean, they're notorious. They don't negotiate with anybody. I mean, so that, you know, like don't be looking there. But
yeah.
I was able to get like maybe my top 25 codes increased a little bit, but As far as insurance negotiator, like I use, I use Apex negotiations. I don't know the name of the company. Apex Reimbursements, I think. And I mean, I wasn't quite happy with them, so I wouldn't use them again.
I've heard
some other companies that people have been happy with.
Why weren't you really happy with them?
The thing is, like, you don't really know that you're unhappy with them until you open your doors and then you start submitting claims or start to like try to quote insurances. And we were getting all across the board, like, no, we don't have your right, like EIN number. No, we don't have your W-9 form. Like, please resubmit it to us. No, we don't have the right address for you. Like, we don't have, like, we have a suite number. Like, they didn't add our suite number. So, like, checks are getting bounced back. Like, we don't have the right W-9. So, we see you as our network, and we're sending your check to the patient. So, like, we ran into so many issues with just information not being there. Like, thinking we were in network, because I had done this, like, well early. Like, you got to start like 3 months prior before you open. And I even had delays in opening. And still, on the day I opened the doors, I'm out of network with this insurance. And, like, I ended up, like, having to write off a lot of this because we had, like, you know, told the patient to their face, like, hey, we're in network with you. This is what it's going to be. This is your portion. You know, it is an estimate, but this is an estimate on what your in-network fees is. To go back to a patient and say, oh, no, we're out of network. Like, here's our UCR fees. Like, pay these. And, you know, you're gonna burn people, like, left and right. Yeah. And, you know, you're trying to fill up your Google with five-star reviews. You're gonna do just the opposite. So, like, it's just a hit that, you know, you got to take. And, like, you know, I paid a lot of money to have them do all this. And they cost me that much money and more by not having this information correct. So, like, you know, if you're paying somebody to do it, like, you want them to do it right. And I was on the phone with them multiple times, like, trying to get them cleared up. And they did some of it, but we had to do a lot of it by hand. Like, I unfortunately had a really, really all-star team from the beginning. And they were able to kind of take control of it and get it situated.
That's good, man. So then let's go to the next question. How many employees do you have right now?
I have six. Actually, I might even have. I have seven now. I just hired two hygienists.
Oh, man.
So I just hired them. And I couldn't have waited a day longer. actually, this week was my first week of working with hygienists. And I was able to be so much more productive. I'm thinking of, like, back in my head, oh, man, my payroll is going to be so much. Like, my overhead for my employees is going to be so much because I'm paying individuals, like, $30 plus an hour to do what I could essentially do. But my schedule is just so full that I was able to just move my patients over, and then immediately it starts filling with way more productive procedures than just doing like cleanings. Yeah. So now, like, what was before an hour and a half for like a new patient exam is only like 15 minutes of my time, not even scheduled. And I'm able to do crowns, root canals, anything I want, you know, just next door, and it doesn't even bother my day. It's been fantastic. I can't look back. Like, now that I've experienced it, it's like, no, this is it. Like, you know, I can literally see what I'm producing. It's night and day.
Yeah, you kind of see, like, the time. Your time is more valuable now. Like, it's always more valuable. Like, the doctor's time is the most valuable. But so, did you have any, like, issues finding employees, like the right employees? Right team, things like that.
Yeah, always. You know, fortunately, you know, I did take the one hire I did was the beginning that I took my time in hiring were my two first employees, and they were all stars. I mean, I really I met everybody at either I walked them through like the rummage that was my practice at the time, or I met them at Starbucks, you know, down the road, and then I brought them over. Or I met them actually at the Planet Smoothie right next to me that was open, and then I walked them over through the construction. But I took my time to really hire the first employees because they were really the most important, like able to like unpack boxes, label bins, label things, organize it, and then. You know, my front desk was huge. I'll tell you. So I hired three employees, one front desk, two in the back. because I already had my first month, I saw 70 patients, and looking at the schedule, I was already booked out for a week. So I mean, we did a great job pre-marketing. So I knew traditionally a startup is one front desk, one back office. But looking at my schedule, I knew I needed to, and I without a doubt did. But so I hired my front desk, and I she had strong resume. But the first week, we did 1 week of training prior to opening. I let go of my front desk by the second day. And she wasn't familiar with open dental. She knew front desk, you know, procedure, but she really wanted to wing it. And she kept telling me, oh, once I have a patient in front of me, I'll learn it. Once I'm doing this for real, I'll do it. I'll learn it. And this wasn't, I didn't feel comfortable exposing my patients to that. And I just knew it was just a kind of a bombshell, like ready to go off. And I also had the confidence that I had my assistant that I hired knows the system, knows open dental from a previous dentist she worked with, and she was cross-trained front and back. And I had a sit-down conversation with her and asked her if she could do the front office work. And she said, yes, I'll do it, but you got to know that you hired me for the back, and that's what I want to be. I said, that's fine. Like, I'll get you the back. And I was able to let go of my front desk, and then I was able to hire another back office employee to take over for the one that I moved up front. Eventually, I moved my back office assistant permanently to the front desk, and I sat her down again. Like, hey, listen, her name's Lou. Lou, you're great. Like I want you up front. I need you up front. It's not just that I want you. And I was like, but I'll pay you, you know, what you're worth. And so I paid her, like, essentially what I paid the one front desk employee that I hired originally, like, the same wage. Like, you know, a front office employee is going to make so much more than a back office employee. And she was thrilled. It's the most she's ever made, like, working in dental office. You know, it's enough to keep her at the front because she's doing a great job. Like, she'll eventually be my office manager. I mean, she's that good.
Dang, that's good, man. That's really good. So then... Yeah. What's been your total production so far? Like last month, let's go last month. What was your total production for last month?
Sure. So last month, let me run a report for you. So I have for accuracy's sake. Awesome. Last month, I produced 99,477. That's month five. And after write-offs, that comes to, you know, minus write-offs, minus adjustments, comes to 71,000.
Okay, so 71. How long have you guys, excuse me, how long have you guys been open for? Like, I'm talking about...
That'd be month five.
Oh, so 5 months. Oh, yeah. That's good. Good stuff. So
71,000. Month six, I've already produced 65,000 and projected to produce 109,000. But, you know, I still, I'm looking at the schedule, you know, I still have room for, you know, a lot more patients there. So we definitely projected to produce more than I did last month.
How many ops do you guys have?
We have 8 ops total. I outfitted 4 from the start because I just know how I like to work. I'm routinely working out of 3, but having that extra 1 op there, it's just an extra buffer for any kind of overflow, especially now with the hygienist. Like, I was able to bring them on kind of like, you know, next day. I found a hygienist next day. I was able to have them in without having to call in Henry Schein, order new chairs, order new, like, delivery units. I was able to say, hey, come on in. And then, you know, I'm working out of, like, you know, one less chair, but it works right now. So I didn't have to do a whole lot to make that transition.
Gotcha. And then your total collection was, what'd you say it was?
Total collection from last year or from
last month? Last month, yeah.
Last month, I think it was around 47,000 last month.
47.
Look at that. Yeah, last month income was
47. Gotcha. Okay.
And so then, I mean, in the month before that, though, I was only in maybe the $60,000 range. So, like, collections is always, you know, delayed 30 to 90 days.
Yeah.
So that's why there's always, like, a difference. So collections this month I expect to be way higher than what it was last month.
Okay. How many days are you guys open?
We open 4 days a week. We originally opened at 3 days a week. And then, you know, pretty quickly, I'd say by month by month two, I was able to open 4 days. And then during the very slow period in October to September, like hurricane season, I went back to 3 days a week. And mm-hmm. that was really tough. That was really, really tough to do.
Like it was too busy?
I lost staff. No. So I went back to 3 days a week because I couldn't fill the books. Like I only had in like October and September, you know, I only had like 27 new patients mm-hmm. and then maybe like 32 new patients the next month. And we were slow. I mean, it's September is the slowest month in dentistry. It's just a very, dentistry can be seasonal, and that's the slow yeah. time. That's when you want to go on vacation. That's when I'll go on vacation this year for sure. And I had to cut down days. I had to cut staff hours. I had to cut down days. And I had four employees at the time. I had one tell me that, you know, I didn't have enough hours for him, and he left. And you know, that's common. I had to tell them to on slow days, hey, can you guys pass these out to the business around me? Can you go to the car dealership up there and meet and greet? Can you pound the pavement? And I was doing that. I did maybe like three weeks straight, like a couple of days when we just had some people like fall off the schedule, like I had to get them out there and just kind of get people in. And honestly, you know, you see people come in almost immediately after doing that. It's not, you know, a huge like windfall of patients, but you're seeing like one or two each time you're sending somebody out to do that.
Yeah, man, that's the power of ground marketing right there, man. That's good stuff. That's really good stuff.
Yeah.
So then normal hours too? Are you open 9 to 5?
No, I'm open 8 to 6, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then Tuesday I'm open 10 to 7. That's my late day.
Okay. Gotcha. 8 to 7. And then how many new patients are you getting or attracting monthly right now?
So last month we did 72. This month I know we're on track to do that, if not more. Because we had already seen a ton. New patients this month. Let me see.
That's good though.
So this month we're on track at 61. We've already seen 61 new patients, and it's already 18. So, and we saw 72 last month. Mm-hmm. So, like, we could possibly reach 100 this month, and that'd be awesome.
What are you doing
I was gonna say, I think that for a startup, you need at least 50 a month. I mean, hands down, I couldn't survive on less than that. Like, I don't foresee a very profitable. Well, now I'm seeing a very successful first 6 months. After the first 6 months are through, things will get a lot better at that much. But it'll be a hard first 6 months for sure. Well, if you're doing 50 or less.
Yeah.
But for marketing, we're doing. I just increased it. So like, you know, I use Breakaway Practice for my marketing. That's who runs. You know, they have a marketing department that handles like AdWords, and they handle.
Oh, you're doing like the Breakaway, the startup package?
No, just it's the marketing.
Oh, okay.
So they also do like, they also have a marketing arm. And so they do my direct mail. They mm-hmm. do my like AdWords. They built my website. And so they kind of just have like one point of contact there that I work through.
How much
originally they're opening.
How much is that? Like the Breakaway marketing package?
Well, it's not. Well, it's a la carte, so you can choose what you want.
I'll say that.
To build up my website was like maybe $5,500 to do the website, which is pretty, you know, pretty average for cost. I think. And then, you know, you can choose to do direct mail. You can choose to do SEO with them. They'll do like SEO management. And I honestly opened with like the full complement of services. I opened with with the SEO, I opened with the social media management, but I quickly kind of canceled them because some of that stuff, you know, I can sign up for directories, I can manage my social media, you know, that kind of stuff. Once I had everything else handled, I was able to kind of circle back and go, oh, okay, I can see what I need. I see what they're doing. I see the benefit, but you know, for X amount of dollars, it doesn't make dollars for sense for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I tapered it back some, but this month in particular, and next month, I did increase my marketing package, like to handle it, like because I have the hygienist now, like I want to try to open up my capacity. I want to like fill my capacity as much as possible. So To open, I did 10,000 mailers. Probably one, it was like 1 week before opening, 10,000 mailers, like the week I opened, and then 10,000 mailers at the end of the month. So, I mean, definitely, like, you're dropping so much money just to get your name out to kind of make a big splash, because you only get one splash, and you kind of have to ride on that momentum forward. So it makes sense to kind of hit it, you know, as hard as you can, because it really does carry you forward. You know, you're kind of a nobody in the area, and you need to, you know, people kind of do like the shiny and new you know, office, but you still need that kind of word of mouth to kind of keep you going.
Yeah, and dentistry is really intimate with the general population, so they really want to, you know what I mean, like find someone that they can, like, not just trust, but like, hey man, how cool is he, like, how, like, where's his stuff? Oh, I see him everywhere now. Like, yeah, he's okay, we should go to him, right? Like, they see you all the time.
Yeah, you start to get that. So, like, initially they're just mailers, you know, putting some good offers on your mailers. You know, we did, you know, free whitening for new patients with insurance. Anybody with insurance that's on the schedule, we're still doing this. Even if they don't know about it, I'm still taking impressions, still doing, like, custom bleaching trays for all new patients. And that's, you know, just a great practice builder, just great to kind of give them value. And, you know, I know for a fact that every patient with insurance is doing whitening in my practice. I do a $59 new patient exams and x-rays for the uninsured. And, you know, I'll do, free second opinion consults. So somebody wants to walk in here and they have a, you know, something with another, you know, some kind of, it's really just a price quote. They're generally price shopping. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll see them free and try to win them over.
Okay. So how saturated would you say dentistry is in your community?
So I'm like on the outskirts of Jacksonville, proper. So I am in like Duval County, but I'm just north of, you know, the more like kind of affluent, suburb of Jacksonville that people like generally commute out of. So I get the mix of both populations. I would say that my area, I did pick out a nice pocket where there's not much competition at all. You know, generally my competition is going to be Heartland and like more in a Medicaid practice. There's no private dental practice that's my immediate competition. I can't point to one person and go, hey, these are my competition right here. So that is a huge benefit. I mean, I'm definitely kind of the only game in this area. You know, generally people were commuting to a dentist prior to me being here.
How far is, like, would you say is like the closest, like the Medicaid one, the one you said that's like a Medicaid practice, how far is that?
Yeah, it's kind of probably about 3 miles down the road.
Oh, okay, but it's
like not that. And then Heartland, and they're in the same shopping center as Heartland, and Heartland's been there forever. But you know, they're going to have, you know, Heartland is not, you know, we have to worry about them too much. I mean, they have rotating doctors. They're gonna upsell people. They're doing a lot of, like, you know, I see a lot of like amalgam clearance from them. Like, they're diagnosing a lot of amalgams to get removed. I've seen it numerous times. They're pushing other things that are generally pushing people out. So if you just know how to treat somebody and kind of and treatment plan properly, don't try to reach for every dollar, you know, and you know, maximize every patient effort. You know, you're really just building their relationship on that first visit, and if you're doing that right, you know, you're not going to have an issue. I firmly believe that. You know, I definitely do, and people will see it.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
People really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's really.
Yeah, cool. Man, my most important. I always tell my girls, most important visit is that new patient exam, and it's a 90-minute visit, and we have it down cold. I mean, I've done it so many times. I'm doing it. I did it 70 times last month. I did it 61 already this month, and you know, back when I was cleaning them, but it's 90 minutes. They see them back. They meet them. We get to know them, taking the x-rays. We were treating them well. You know, I'm showing them things that, you know, in my high-tech office, I'm showing them things that they've never seen before in a dental office. And I'm getting to know who they are, where they're from, you know, what they like to do for fun. Mm-hmm. Just getting to know them as a person, how they heard about us. And then, you know, we're walking them out. We're giving them, you know, a goodie bag with some swag in it. And, we're presenting financials in a clear manner, and we're quoting their insurance correctly, and then and we're rescheduling them properly. So like, we're doing a lot of things right, and we got that appointment down because it's the number one appointment. It's the number one appointment that we get reviews from. Number one appointment that that marries patients to our office. So I mean, you got to get that patient down. Got to know that workflow.
Yeah, you're right. You only get like one chance for that first impression, like to hit a home run with them. You know, no. So like, you got to make it happen.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So okay. What?
Yeah, they chose you. Yeah. They chose you, so you mm-hmm. want to treat them right.
Mm-hmm. What's been your best ROI so far?
Probably mailers, definitely. But it's quickly becoming Google, and it's quickly becoming internal referrals. Probably, we're at 60. We just hit 65 star Google reviews in 6 months. And honestly, probably after 20, it really started to build momentum. And, people just don't write like small little clips. They write like paragraphs of like, oh man, this is just amazing. Like, Dr. Ashball, Boucher Dental's team was great. And I mean, it means a lot. And like, my girls are actually, today is the day. I got them manicures and pedicures at the nail salon next door for hitting 50 Google reviews.
That's nice.
And just a big emphasis. So like, my number one thing about that appointment was you got to ask for reviews. I mean, you have to ask for that. That's the number one thing you can do. Like I use Legwork for my CRM and it has Bird Eye built into it. I mean, there's pros and cons to all of them out there, mm-hmm. but it's generally automated. They don't need to ask. Like, I'm going to send them a text and an email asking for a review, but it's so much more powerful when you give them that bag of swag and you go, oh, thank you for joining us. Please let other people know we're here and tell them about, your experience by leaving us a review. And they can just do that simple thing. I'm not always there to audit it, hear it, whatever, but I want that done repeatedly. So I incentivize it to get it done. And it got done. So we, generally we've been open 6 months now, we have 60 reviews, generally about 10 reviews a month. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good, man.
It's a good way of doing it. I mean, that's generally what I can see now. It may pick up in the future, as we are seeing more people, as our recall base is opening up, because there's a lot of people we've seen that haven't done reviews, and so we'll probably get some from the people that we're going to start seeing again.
Yeah, I know. So, super simple.
Generally, that's a good rule of thumb for me to remember, like how long it takes to kind of get there. But honestly, like Google people, when they search for you, they're going to, it's the most powerful review is somebody else they know telling them about you. The next most powerful thing is reading other people's, experiences. They might be random individuals, but, if they're writing very detailed, in-depth reviews of you on Google, that means that's the next best thing to, like, an internal review.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, they're talking about you, man. That's good. That's really good. So then what's been your biggest, so far to date, what's been your biggest fail or pitfall?
Let's see. I mean, it's a great question. I still don't delegate probably as much as I need to. Like, I'm still like break my back to like kind of keep this place running. Like, honestly, mm-hmm. I'm still putting in, 60 plus hour days or weeks, to keep this place running. Like, I'm here on my day off today. Just fixing the CBCT machine, hanging up things, doing some organization, doing paperwork. So like, I still have tons of stuff to do. And I always feel like we're just about to turn that corner. Like, if I do this, I want to do it again in the future and it'll already be set. But I always have to go back to things and kind of tweak them. But the next and most newest failure I'm doing is growth. Like managing the schedule staff. Like, now that I've got 5 people, I just added hygienists. Staffing for the hygienist, staffing the hours, keeping that all in track is a lot of work. It's a lot, like last week I opened up 5 days because I was at capacity. I was like, I need to open a 5th day because I need to get people in. Like, I'm booked out a week. Like, I don't have any room for new patients. Like, open up the 5th day and let's alternate the front desk schedule. Let's alternate the assistant schedule. I'll bring in a temp because I only have 5 people. Mm-hmm. And they're already at like, my goals have hit 40 plus hours multiple times. I've had to pay them overtime just to kind of keep it open. And just managing that is takes a lot of time and a lot of work. But you know, I think as I get used to it and doing it more, it'll get easier. But and after you get consistency, but like you can't live in a fairy tale and think that the staff is always going to be consistent. That you know you're now married to them. They're going to be with you forever. You know, there's always going to be an influx and outflux of staff coming and going, and that's always going to be a challenge. And I kind of can't wait to get that manager to do that for me, because it'll be such a relief. Because that's the next kind of biggest time drain, mental drain that I'm dealing with.
Yeah. So controlling the growth, right? It's pretty much. That's kind of cool how you said my next biggest failure. Like, you already know. You're like, I already know I'm going to fail at this, like, I got to fail forward. You know what I mean? Like, it has to happen. So many people are kind of are afraid of, like, oh, no, I'm going to fail. Should I even try? You know? But that's cool, man. That's really good, your mindset.
Yeah.
So then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us, now that we kind of got that out of the way, let's tell us, like, all about yourself. Like, how did you get to where you are today? Like, when did you become a dentist? Why did you pick dentistry? Let's just go into the deets.
Yeah, so I've always known I want to be a dentist. I was one of the lucky few that kind of knew what they've always wanted to be. You know, my parents, like, both of them, you know, my mom didn't graduate college, so she was, like, in her 40s. My dad never went to college. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I needed a 9-to-5 job, like, growing up. And I knew I didn't want to be poor like my parents. So I wanted to choose a profession that I'd work and had good hours and I'd make decent living. And I was kind of at that kind of formative time, about, like, honestly, like, eighth or ninth grade, and we're doing, like, career searches, and I kind of stumbled upon it. It kind of clicked then. And the fact that I'd been in braces twice kind of, like, put it together for me. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, I kind of know that. I've been around that a lot. And then the fourth thing would be, I actually took off my own braces. Like, my orthodontist retired. He referred us to a different orthodontist, or I don't even know. I was too young to even realize what was going on. But now looking back, I kind of can think about what happened. But he either retired and somebody bought the practice, mm-hmm. or he refers to another dentist someplace else. And my mom never took me, and I knew I was just about being done with my braces. And he had been telling us, and now I know that, like, you kind of hear that a lot as you're in braces. You never really know when you're done. Orthodontist kind of makes the final say, but mm-hmm. they do lead you on repeatedly, like, oh, just one more month. Oh, just one more month. You know, you just never really know, like, once your refinements are done. But anyway, mm-hmm. I ended up taking the owner's pliers and just snapping off the brackets and then taking the wires off. And I walked around with all this cement on me until it just kind of naturally fell off. Like,
dang.
And my parents didn't know any better. I mean, we're just from, like, the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, like I said, and they didn't know any better.
Did they ever move your teeth or no? Kinda, like, it stayed the same, your teeth?
No, it was, no, my teeth definitely, oh yeah. I didn't get any retainers. Like, my teeth went way back, like, almost back to where they were before. And I did Invisalign on myself, probably, I just finished up last year. Okay. So I did braces, or I did ortho for the third time. And now it's permanent. Now I wear a retainer every night. They're not moving anywhere.
Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah, but I was patient zero from my Invisalign experience.
That's good, man. And then what happened? Okay, so after that, you remove the braces. Now what?
Well, that's like, you know, that's, I just knew what I wanted to be. I told everybody in middle school and high school I was going to be a dentist. And then I got around to applying for colleges, and I got into a few in Pennsylvania. Then I got into University of Florida, which has a dental school. And I go up, you know, my parents were planning on moving to Florida. They'd always told me that. And so I decided to go down there. Like I said, I moved out when I was 18, went mm-hmm. to Florida. And my first 2 years, I was kind of in the dorm rooms by myself. And my parents moved to Jacksonville my last 2 years. So they eventually sold the house and moved down. And then I was able to go straight through, you know, just knowing what you want to be before you do any of those, make those big decisions, like what major you want to be, mm-hmm. like what school you want to go to. This streamlines the whole effort. Like, you're not wasting time taking credits for some major that doesn't apply to what you're going to need or what you're going to do. And, you know, it saves you a lot of time and money. So I just did the 4 years of Florida. And then I applied, got in my first time, I went to Ohio State for dental school, and then did my 4 years at Ohio State, I took a military scholarship to pay for dental school. I did 4 years in the military. And then I knew I wanted to own a practice while I was in the military. And I signed a lease while I was in, for this place, did the research while I was in Kansas for the location in Florida. And then made the transition from Kansas to Florida after I got out of the service.
Did you ever have any?
I've always kind of known where I wanted to be. It took a long time to get there, that's all.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's still, like, how old are you right now?
32.
Yeah. Nah, man, you got it. You got it, man. Did you ever have any issues, like, when you told the military, like, hey, I want to own my own practice? Or wait, it wasn't in the same location, right? Or anything like that, or no?
That was an issue. So, it's not from the military. Like, they weren't, like, saying, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. The issue was with the bank. Like, you can't get a loan for practice while you're in the service. It's just not possible. You know, you're under contract with the military, and they can send you, like, at a moment's notice, like, across the world. So, like, even though, like, my final out is, like, guaranteed, I have my final out scheduled, like, meaning that, you know, I know when my last day is, like, until you have the actual paperwork saying you're out, like, nobody's going to give you a loan. And so what I had to do, I had to go through with my wife. I had to get my wife to guarantee it. You know, fortunately, she's a dentist, and, you know, they're getting two dentists to guarantee the same loan. But without her, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do what I did. I would not be able to get the money for funding. And in retrospect, like, you know, because of the delays, I might have been able to put it off if I could have financed, like, the deposits prior, like, through some other means, by savings and whatnot. I may have been able to do it, but at the time and the schedule that I was assuming I was going to be on, like, I needed her to be, like, at a co-guarantor
to do that.
So, and I didn't even have a license in Florida, too, so they're also looking at that, like, you know, fortunately, my wife had a license in Florida. Like, there's a lot of things. Like, they're going, you're opening a practice in Florida, but you don't have a license. How are you going to get one? Can you get one? They don't know, like, what that takes. Like, you know, you're still in the service. They're just seeing all these red flags, and you don't really fit in that box where they go, well, here's money. Like, take it. And yeah, so there's a lot of things there. So, and without my wife, like, it wouldn't be possible.
Yeah,
but,
man.
They're definitely running into, like, opening a second practice, like, it's running into issues now because of that dual guarantee. So
when do you plan to open the second one?
It is what it is. Well, that's the thing. So it's coming up. There's a place around here breaking ground in 2019.
Ooh.
And great location. I've already done, you know, the research on it. I know exactly where it's at. And, well, this one's been a success, and I already know how to do it. So, you know, there's two schools of thought, like, either grow this practice to be like a mega giant practice and be really successful, or you can kind of share the wealth and open up another one and grow, you know, raise your ceiling on your total possible growth, although it'd be a lot harder. So, I'm trying to open the second one. I think that, you know, I've already gone through startup. You know, my wife could easily staff this one, and I could go through the growing pains of the other one again, and kind of see where it takes us. You know, yeah. I don't really know what the end goal will be, and I don't really need to decide that yet. I still have plenty of time to kind of decide that, but I see an opportunity for to be in a place that it's kind of once in a lifetime to kind of get in there, and I think that anybody in the right mind would want to be there. So. Yeah, I said, why not? So let's do it. And, but the issue is having all that guaranteed, already, like, my wife and I are already guaranteeing, the loan for this practice. So, you know, loaning out to us again is a challenge. So, you know, finding other avenues for the finances is, kind of the search I'm going through right now.
Gotcha. And then, so, what advice do you want to give to either, like, the new dentists who are about to open a practice, or, like, the dental students who, you know, they went to the dental school to be a dentist, but they want to open up their own practice, like, right off the bat? What advice would you give them so far?
Yeah, so I would say go for it. I mean, you're never going to be ready. You're absolutely never going to be ready. I think definitely juggling the clinical aspect and then the business up on top of it would be extremely challenging. You know, fortunately, I was kind of able to get the clinical stuff down while I was, you know, I had 4 years, five years to prepare for. I did four in the service, one associating before I was able to open the doors here. So, you know, I was definitely able to get my hands, you know, experience prior to getting open. So the clinical stuff is, you know, that's on autopilot. You know, that's easy for me. Mm-hmm. But then the business stuff is a new challenge. So doing both at the same time would be, you know, extremely, extremely hard, but it can be done. I know dentists out there. I know friends that have done it. So it's definitely possible. And then you got to know what you want too. So like the decision between opening a startup and buying a practice is a big one. And, you know, buying a practice is definitely more financially stable, financially sound, and more guaranteed than doing a startup. But if you know what you want is not out there, or if it's not out there in the right location, then you don't have a choice. And if that's what you want, your heart says, you know, this is my vision, this is what I want, then it starts for you. But, you know, get ready to dig in, because it's a long road. It's a lot of work. And nobody's going to do it for you, no matter what consultant you hire. Nobody's going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. Be ready to learn.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're right. You're definitely right. All right. So did we leave anything out? Did you want to mention anything else, Jonas?
No. That about sums it up. I mean, I'd be happy to, if anybody want to reach out and, you know, pick my brain or you have any questions I could, you know, I didn't really expound on, I'd be more happy to. They can reach me, you know, at my personal email. It's just jonasashball@gmail.com, and be happy to write back to anybody out there.
Where can they find you on social media?
Jonas Ash is what I go by on Facebook. I'm on there. I'm on the Making a Startup Facebook group, yeah. And just all around.
Okay, awesome, man. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you, and we'll hear from you soon.
Hey, I appreciate it, Michael.
And we're back. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning into that episode. A lot of information, huh? A lot of information. I thought it was interesting. I thought everything was interesting. Everything was interesting. The current new patients he's attracting. Here's the thing, what I liked about it is he didn't also just stick with one marketing format and try to ride that out the whole way. No, he's like, let me use this for the grand opening or this for this time. Right now, what's currently working is this, so let's keep pushing that. I like that a lot. I also liked why he became a dentist, how he was able to work on himself and he became his first Invisalign. This is pretty cool. What's interesting is how he rode the waves. And what I mean by that is when you see sometimes that something needs to be adjusted, pivot, right? Adjust it. Don't try it. Because I wonder, let's just say he decided to open the same days and he's like, you know what? I know we're doing bad. September sucks. Let's stay open, right? No, he said, look, I know the trends. I know the waves. Why stress about it, right? Why put even more stress on myself? Because opening up a dental practice and even running one is super stressful enough already. So why continue to do that? Let me just ride this wave out, right? I know it's going to be great in the end. And he seems like a really chill guy too, right? So I thought that was interesting. That's something we can all kind of like just meditate upon or take home is, like, it's going to be okay, right? But, like, sometimes in the startup process, you're kind of like, ugh. Or even when you have a practice already and you're like, what the heck? Why is the time slow? Or why are these patients no-showing? Maybe it's because of a holiday or something. Ride the wave, right? Don't stress yourself out for that moment of time. I mean, you're going to listen to this episode again. You're going to find the right strategies to beat this trench that you're in or this fail that you've encountered. So yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to go reach out to Dr. Jonas Ash or Jonas Ash on Facebook. And please, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to drop a review, guys. That helps me out so much. Yeah, and with that being said, I'll talk to you soon.